It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. One out of every 68 children born in the United States will be diagnosed on the autism spectrum. There's no cure for autism, but if children with autism can learn how to interact with others, they can grow up to be independent, successful adults. This hour, we'll talk about applied behavior analysis, a therapy for children with autism. The state of Iowa recently allocated $5 million to make this therapy available to families in Iowa through the Regional Autism Assistance Program. And with me right now is Dr. Deborah Waldron. She's director of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. Hello, Dr. Waldron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting us.
And give me just a thumbnail history of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. It's been around now for 20 years, right?
Correct. The Regional Autism Assistance Program was established a little over 20 years ago as a collaboration amongst the Department of Education as well as the University of Iowa Child Health Specialty Clinics. And specifically, it was developed to provide better communication amongst educational providers, community providers, medical providers, and more importantly, children and families living with autism.
And about 20 years ago is when we started seeing the numbers of diagnoses really climb. And that has just climbed and climbed over the last couple of decades, right?
Correct. The incidence and prevalence of ASD has increased dramatically over the past 20 years, as you've said. Probably more over the past 10 years, we've seen quite an increase. Part of that is due to better diagnostic techniques, better recognition, better identification, and the ability for us to actually interact with children and families and provide them with services has also probably increased people's awareness and desire for therapy for their children.
Applied behavior analysis is the therapy we're going to be focusing on this hour. How long has that been around?
It's an evidence-based practice that has been around probably for 15, 20 years, really is well-tested, a lot of science behind it, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, articles written about the efficacy of ABA.
And when working with children on the autism spectrum, ABA is really the therapy that seems to be most effective?
It's one of the most effective therapies. Again, it's an intensive therapy. It requires a lot of time. It requires trained individuals. It requires a motivated family as well as the ability to spend a lot of time. There are other therapies out there that are complementary, but this is the one that seems to be the gold standard.
All right. Can you describe it? We will dig into it a lot in greater detail as we go on through the hour. But briefly, describe how this works.
Well, basically, it's, as the name says, applied behavior analysis. It's having a therapist, a trained individual, observe a child, interact with the child, identify certain behaviors that may be challenging for the child in terms of his or her social interactions, their ability to have their daily functioning. And basically, there's a couple of different things that happen. Either the child learns ways to redirect themselves. There may be visual or verbal clues that are given to the child when they're starting to exhibit a challenging behavior. Sometimes it's just a matter of teaching them an activity just to, I'd say, calm themselves down. So it's so simple but so beautiful, and it's very effective.
And what age groups are we talking about working with?
Actually, there are people that say that it could be instituted below the age of two. A lot of the literature is above the age of 2 years. But it can be effective throughout a person's entire life. I mean, adults can respond to ABA as well.
And you mentioned a lot of time, and by saying a lot of time, can you give me an idea?
Well, since it is a therapy, you want it to be consistent, and you want it to be effective, and you want it to be reinforced. So the behaviors that are observed by the therapist, also we want the families as well as teachers to also be aware of the therapy that's going on. So while it's intense within the within a therapist's office, it also has to be carried over into the home and educational and social setting as well. Some kids actually go to therapy for 5 days a week, 3 or 4 hours a day, either part of school or after school. But then we like to have the families continue it on weekends and at home as well.
So we know that this program can be very effective. That is an incredible time commitment and, of course, an incredible financial commitment as well. Is this a therapy that is covered by insurance?
In the state of Iowa, it is covered by Medicaid. So any child that is eligible for Medicaid through the EPSDT, the Early Periodic Screening and Diagnosis and Treatment program, is eligible for ABA services. And that's been in effect in our state for a long period of time. Not many other insurance companies actually provide that benefit. It is specific to the different companies. The other opportunity for individuals to access that is actually if they're a state employee. In 2011, there was legislation that dependents of state employees would be eligible to receive funding through the state health plan.
And I know that there was an effort in the legislature to change the law so that insurance companies practicing in the state of Iowa would have to cover this kind of therapy. That legislation failed.
Correct. A couple of years ago, Senator Beal introduced legislation. It was entitled Drew's Bill. I think it was actually Senate File 1. It was in honor of his grandchild. And it was not successful. It was felt that at that time it was not that insurance companies should not be mandated to cover ABA services.
But there has been more movement in the legislature. I mentioned earlier this allocation of $5 million to make this therapy more widely available to families. How did that come about, and how do you access that money?
Correct. Well, those are all good questions. It came about actually a bipartisan effort by Senator Beal and his colleagues in the Senate, as well as Representative Dave Heaton and some of his colleagues in the House. And they really felt that it was important for the state to make a statement that they felt that ABA services were important and that they wanted to make sure that some children, not all children, but some children were eligible to receive ABA services. As you said before, it's an intense therapy. It's actually an expensive therapy, but again, it's effective. So a group of legislators came together and tried to develop what they thought would be a fair and reasonable program for some kids. It's actually called the Autism Support Fund or Autism Support Program. The Regional Autism Assistance Program is complementary to the Autism Support Program, and I know it's kind of hard to separate the two. They work together, but they're try to achieve different goals. So the Autism Support Fund specifically is that $5 million. Initially in 2013, it was $2 million and then for fiscal year 14. And then in 2014 legislative session, they added an additional $3 million. It's for children that are age 0 to 9. They can't be eligible for ABA services through any other insurance, Medicaid or private insurance or state health plan. It's for $36,000 a year, up to 24 months, and there is an income eligibility as well. It's only accessible to families that are below 400% of the federal poverty level.
So $36,000 would cover a couple of hours a day, or how does that work?
It depends. It depends on the therapist. It depends on the reimbursement rate. But it's not supposed to meet all of the needs of a child in terms of ABA. We expect our education system to provide some of those services. Sometimes parents find other resources to help supplement what the state would provide to them. And unfortunately, it doesn't cover everything.
Do you know how many children have been able to take advantage of this program so far?
Sure. So the fund actually, because of the requirement to have an administrator and administrative rules and to go through the appropriate legal and political process, the funds only became available in April of this year, April of 2014. And there have been probably, and as of June 30th, there were 10 applications. And of those, 50% were found eligible. By eligible, you need to have a medical diagnosis of autism. You need to, again, not have Medicaid, and some of the individuals were ineligible because of income or their other ability to access services through Medicaid.
There, of course, this is a therapy that needs to be administered by a board-certified behavior analyst. Are there enough people in this state to provide this kind of service if a child meets all of those requirements?
Sure. Unfortunately, there aren't enough BCBAs, as we call them, board certified behavioral analysis. The legislation actually called for the ability for a psychologist that's trained in ABA to also be able to provide that. So still, with allowing our psychologists to do it, there aren't enough. But some of the things that we're actually utilizing is actually to deliver the services through telehealth so that families don't actually have to travel to a center to receive it. They could actually receive it within their home or in a center that would have the telehealth equipment. So that will actually help increase access. We're also talking about workforce development. That's not actually in the legislation, but it is something important that our legislature as well as schools need to look at because we do want to train more individuals.
And do we know how effective it is to have this therapy administered by distance through mm-hmm. the telehealth? Has research been done on that?
Actually, yes. The University of Iowa has conducted a number of trials over the past 4 years that actually now have literature that has been published. Drs. Wacker and Dr. Lindgren at the University of Iowa are the principal investigators, and the research has shown it to be phenomenally successful, so successful that a lot of individuals across the nation as well as internationally are looking at it.
Really? So is it as effective as being in a room with a therapist?
The comparison of the two is ongoing right now, so I can't share those results, but I would say it's promising.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment, and I'm going to welcome a board-certified behavior analyst, or BCBA, into the conversation as well. We will get into some of the details of this kind of therapy, and you're welcome to join our conversation as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And later in the hour, we'll talk about technology for children with autism. I'll talk to a computer scientist who's developed apps for children with autism. Right now with me is Dr. Deborah Waldron. She's director of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about applied behavior analysis. It's a therapy for children with autism, and the state of Iowa recently allocated $5 million to make the therapy available. With me is Dr. Deborah Waldron. She is the director of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. And joining us now is Allison Bateen. She is a board-certified behavior analyst. That means she can administer this kind of therapy. She works at Hills and Dales Child Care Center in Dubuque. She's also the mother of three children who were diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Hello, Allison.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks. I appreciate the invitation.
And we were talking a little bit about the history of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. And I want to talk with you as a mother who's all of your sons are in their 20s now?
They are, which means I had my children when I was six.
I believe you. But so your kids were diagnosed about 20 years ago.
Almost exactly 20 years ago. They were right at the beginning of what we have seen as the significant increase. When our boys were beginning and in the midst of the diagnostic process, almost no one knew what we were talking about. And frankly, I did not even know the term autism until we had to kind of figure that out with our kids.
So what kind of support was available to a mother of three sons who were diagnosed 20 years ago?
And pretty much nothing. At the time, we lived in the Chicago suburbs of Illinois. We were fortunate enough to work at the University of Chicago with some of their researchers, including Dr. Catherine Lord, who is one of the researchers who's been kind of at the highest level. So we had that support. But in terms of helping our school system figure out what to do and helping us figure out what to do, we really could not find any support or understanding in our area. So we did contact the University of California, Los Angeles, where a Dr. Ivar Lovas had been doing some research on applied behavior analysis. And with that support, we ended up having to pay and fly those individuals out to Illinois to help train staff and create our own ABA program.
And when did you move from being a mom to being a therapist?
Well, probably on the day they were diagnosed.
Right.
But quickly we realized that in order to really provide the type of life that we wanted for our boys and for our families, future success and happiness, I needed to go to school to figure out how to be their mom. So with a wonderful, supportive husband and just a lot of sleepless nights, I went and did all the training and a master's in autism and master's in behavior analysis and the board certification and all those other pieces so that we could do it. And thankfully found that I really, really found a career that I love.
And of course, anybody who has spent much time with children who are diagnosed on the autism spectrum knows that autism has many, many faces. You have three sons who are all diagnosed. Can you give me an idea of the variations between the three of them and their diagnoses?
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of jokingly say that if there's anything connected to autism, it lives in our house. So you can come visit. It's like a museum. My oldest son originally had a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. I would say at this point at 23, he may not get a diagnosis of anything. Lots of great early intervention by the age of three, and that's why we want kids in for therapy and treatment early. Our second son has a diagnosis of autism. He is verbal, we would say hilariously verbal on some days because his perspective on life is still definitely that of autism. You would see some of those outward signs of hand movements and just unusual interests and focus. He does own his own business and works out of his room and our home 5 or 6 hours a day. Our oldest son is a senior in college and will be graduating this year with a degree and has been to China for 4 months and has done a lot of interesting things. And our youngest son has a diagnosis of autism, and he's significantly challenged with his autism. He is considered nonverbal, has always struggled with severe behavior challenges, physical aggression, puberty caused a lot of challenges for him. So we've been through a lot of different systems and processes and therapies and everything you can imagine in that whole spectrum of autism that we were blessed with.
When you were first searching for help and you learned about applied behavior analysis, can you describe for me what you saw, what you experienced that convinced you that this was something? I mean, obviously you went to great lengths to be able to provide this therapy for your sons. What did you see that made that worthwhile to you?
I'm somewhat of a research geek. So I read a lot of research, a lot of medical research even at the time. And in looking at anything else that was an option, this one had the most validity and efficacy and long-term success. And by that, that's always an interesting word, but I mean the best long-term outcomes of improving the individual's ability to have the life they wanted. So that pretty much sealed the deal for us. We did whatever we needed to at the time. I empathize completely with families who are doing whatever they can to help their child. And the opportunity we currently have in Iowa to help at least some of our families is a great step in that right direction.
Now, as a board-certified behavior analyst, when you begin your work with a child who has a diagnosis, what do you do?
First, we're going to meet with the family because we want to know what their priorities are, where they are struggling, where they see their needs being met. We have the opportunity in Dubuque, where we live, that we collaborate with our school system, with the Mercy Autism Center that also does diagnosis. So we get everybody together to ensure that we are all moving on the same plan and very similar goals. We can do the intensive one-to-one, but as Dr. Waldron also highlighted, it needs to be generalized into home and into the community. So we will initially meet with family, we observe the child, we look at any history, any other documentation that's come with it. We do some assessment of skill levels and behavior and take some data initially, and then we write up a plan. And ABA also doesn't just look at challenging behavior. I think that's somewhat of a misnomer, because the intent is that we can improve and increase positive behaviors, positive learning behaviors, at the same time that we're looking to decrease challenging behaviors.
So, Dr. Waldron, why don't you step in here and give me a for instance of a behavior that can be shaped through this kind of therapy?
Sure. So one of the behaviors that parents sometimes see is that children get upset when there's a change in routine. So there are different cues that can the child can be taught on how to make a transition from one situation to another. Sometimes it's as simple as the child is playing with one toy and another child wants to come in and share that toy with him. And to just reinforce behaviors to have that child be able to share the toy successfully with the other child and not get upset and frustrated.
So what would the therapist do to – I mean, I understand every situation is different, but what are some of the things that a therapist might do to help shape the child's behavior so that that could be a successful interaction?
Sure. So first, obviously, the therapist would model sharing behavior with the child. Sometimes it would be as simple as when a new individual walked into the room to just help the child with autism look at the other child directly in the eyes, to have them greet the child, to have them work in just showing the other child the toy without actually handing the toy over. It's a number of iterative processes over and over again of reinforcing the behavior.
And, of course, one of the things that is very common with children on the autism spectrum is a lack of ability to read body language, something that, you know, when I'm with my kids, I'm constantly communicating with them through the look on my face. I remember when my daughter was 2 years old and said, "Mama, why do you close your eyebrows?" And that was because I was scowling and something that was going on. And children on the spectrum don't pick up on those little signals that we give all the time often. So is it a question of magnifying these signals so that they can see or get an idea of what the adult that they're interacting with is feeling?
Sure. I would say probably not necessarily magnifying, but be able to actually identify what it is that another person is doing and trying to internalize what that actually means. So obviously this is a very complex it's the nervous system, and it's a very complex thing to understand, and we really don't fully understand all of it. We understand how people interact with each other, but we don't actually understand the full science behind why a child with autism doesn't pick up on those same social cues. So it's you're absolutely right. It's training them to look for other things that mean the same thing.
We're talking about applied behavior analysis, a therapy, a treatment for children who are diagnosed with autism. With me is Dr. Deborah Waldron. She's director of the Regional Autism Assistance Program based in Iowa City. And Allison Bateen is a board-certified behavior analyst who works at Hills and Dales in Dubuque. You're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Allison, you talked about working with children as young as two. And of course, this assistance from the state of Iowa covers kids who are between the ages of 2 and 9.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, down to 0? Okay. So children, once they're diagnosed through the age of 9. And I can imagine, I mean, a number of children who have been diagnosed that I've known have been very verbal. As you mentioned earlier, some children are nonverbal. So if you're working with a child who is nonverbal or preverbal in trying to explain social interactions, I mean, how do you approach that, Allison, if words aren't something that are going to help you make this communication?
So we look at what is motivating to the child. What is the child trying to gain or access in that interaction. I think to look at a 2-, 3-year-old, 4-year-old who does not have verbal language, we don't explain with words what happens. We might set up situations where they want to get something, they need help with something, and we start to, as Dr. Waldron said, present information, either with another person, with visuals, with other things, so that they are reinforced by the motivation of what they want to do. So we might have a child who never goes to get another person to get their drink that they really love. They love juice. So what we might do is block their access to juice. We have the person there. We ask them to either make a sign, to give us a picture, to do something, and look at the person to access the juice. That's a very simplified description, but in general, that's how we're going to teach some of those social engagements.
Can you give me a specific example? And I'm not asking you to violate any confidentiality here, but can you give me a specific example of a behavior that you have worked on and the kind of progress that you have seen over time with one of the children that you've worked with?
Sure, I could probably give you hundreds, but I think, again, many families, first and immediate concern is the verbal communication. We are a verbal society, so they feel like we need to get this child to talk to us in some way. We had a young woman, 7, who started with us in January of this year, who had no verbal words and actually very limited sound. And by the end of May, she had 12 spontaneous words. So she had words that she would approach somebody and say to get what she wanted.
Wow.
And that's from intensive work and focus by both the family, by her school, by our staff, on ensuring that she knew how to communicate. And initially, we didn't have her give verbal. We had her give pictures. But when the verbal is paired with that, she started saying the words.
And I'm sure 12 words can make a world of difference.
Absolutely. For many of our individuals, if we get to the point where we're concerned that they will not have maybe fluent verbal language, one of the best skills ever is to be able to answer a yes or no question. Because often they know exactly what they want, but getting the word out and responding to all the other things that come into play is difficult. But everybody can be given a question back, and if they answer yes or no, then we see a huge reduction in challenging behaviors.
I want to get to the phones. Ivory is on the line in Waukee. Hello, Ivory.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a daughter, and she was diagnosed on the autism spectrum around 2 or 3. They've now taken the diagnosis away from her because she received speech therapy and some other therapies that have taken away some of her behaviors, but she still has challenging behaviors like aggression and social things. She doesn't know how to share or to manage her anger. And I think that she could benefit from ABA, but I don't know how to go about getting it because they've taken the autism diagnosis away from her.
And how old is she now?
She's 4 now.
Okay, so she wasn't diagnosed for a very long period of time?
Well, she was diagnosed when she was about 3. She had all of the normal signs, not very verbal, no eye contact, but a lot of those have gone away through the therapies that she received. And so now she seems very social and she's very verbal, but she still has aggressive behaviors and she doesn't know how to share or to interact appropriately. And those type of behaviors that we don't really know how to, we talk to her and try to explain it to her, but she doesn't quite understand
right.
it.
Well, and of course, you understand that Dr. Waldron is not going to be able to give specific medical advice here. But Dr. Waldron, can you respond to that? I am sure that's an incredibly frustrating situation.
Sure. And thank you for sharing your story. And I'm glad that some of your daughter's behaviors have improved with the therapies that she's been able to access. Obviously, the brain develops in different ways, and I think the most important thing to do is actually to go back to your pediatrician or family practice physician and talk to him or her about what has gone on. Perhaps there's other diagnostic testing that can be done to help identify what's causing the difficulties that your child is experiencing. And then through that, hopefully there'll be appropriate treatments developed, and working with the family as well as the school and other community providers, be able to have your child reach her optimal potential, because she sounds like a wonderful young lady.
And without a diagnosis, there is not a way to receive the state assistance to get this specific therapy.
Correct. You need to have – it's stated in legislation that you need to have a medical diagnosis of ASD provided in order to access this specific fund. But I would recommend going back and talking to your medical provider.
All right. Ivory, thank you so much for your call, and I hope you get the help that you need. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk more about autism and also applied behavior analysis. We'll take a look at new technologies designed for children who are diagnosed with autism. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about autism, and we've been talking about applied behavior analysis. It's a therapy to help children who have autism or have been diagnosed on the autism spectrum. It's a therapy that the state of Iowa has allocated $5 million to make available. With me is Dr. Deborah Waldron. She is the director of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. Also with me is Allison Bateen. She is a board-certified behavior analyst. She works at Hills and Dales in Dubuque, and she's also the mother of three children who were diagnosed with autism. You are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to bring Juan Pablo Orcad into the conversation now. He's an associate professor of computer science at the University of Iowa and has been developing apps for children with autism. And Juan Pablo, I know you started back in 2009. This is before the iPads. So things have changed a lot in the world of apps since then. But as you started out, what were you trying to accomplish?
Yes. Good morning, Charity. It has really been an astounding change in what's available the last few years. In 2009, we first thought we were going to be using those big tabletop multi-touch screens that you might that we actually saw a lot in the 2008 presidential elections. It seemed like every news operation had one where they would zoom in and out of the maps. Mm-hmm. And one of my graduate students, Thomas Hansen, was really interested in the technology, and we actually built one ourselves. And I told him at one point, well, we need to find something useful to do with this instead of just zooming in and out of maps. And in speaking with a colleague at a conference who happened to have a child diagnosed in the autism spectrum, she suggested, well, why don't you try doing something for children with autism to get them engaged socially? We thought we were going to be designing for this other platform, but as a shortcut to try out prototypes with children, we brought in tablets, which back then were Windows tablets only, and we soon realized this tablets worked a lot better than the tabletop displays we were thinking of using. They were a lot more flexible and allowed for other social behaviors, such as sharing a tablet with someone else that you wouldn't really be able to do with a tabletop.
Well, and I understand the therapy that we've been talking about this hour, a large portion of the therapy is focused on helping children learn how to interact with others, help them develop social skills. Now, if I were helping a child develop social skills, a tablet may not be the first place I would turn. How have you been able to design apps that help children interact and engage with others?
Yes, and that's a really great question, because in our daily lives, when we look at mobile devices, we often see them isolating people
right,
from those around them.
Right, we see a lot of people disengaged, yes.
And so a lot of my research has been trying to turn the tables on that and actually design technology so that it actually brings people together and helps them engage in face-to-face activities that they otherwise wouldn't engage in. And that's the idea with all the apps that we designed and the activities around them, is that they naturally encourage children to want to do something with others face-to-face and to have to coordinate actions, to collaborate, to make something together with someone else and have satisfaction at actually doing that. So that's the philosophy behind the apps, and that's what we've been trying to do. And it's a little bit different from what you see with most of the apps that are out there.
So as you have designed these apps, how have you been able to research their efficacy and the ability to engage these children? And then, of course, the benefits that go on from that one session.
So, again, going back to the philosophy behind the apps and the technology, whenever I have worked on designing technologies, I always follow a participatory design approach, meaning that I work together with the actual people who are going to use the technology in their designs. In this case, working together with the children diagnosed with autism, with the teachers, with the therapists, with the parents, to really understand how to best design them. So that was the first step. It makes it a lot more likely that you're going to end up with something useful if they truly participate from the beginning, giving you feedback. Sometimes with children who are not verbal, it was as simple as having a sticky note that said yes, a sticky note that said no, and would ask them, okay, is this better than this, yes or no? And we would make progress like that. And over time, it took about, I would say, at least the first year of going on a weekly basis to two after-school programs, actually an after-school program in an elementary school during the day, to work on the apps and get them to the point where we thought they were actually useful. And same thing with the activities. And then later on, we did an evaluation that was a little more careful with one after-school program here in Iowa City, and we found that compared to very similar activities without apps, the apps actually led to more verbal interactions between children, more words spoken, more physical interactions with the activity. And for two of the apps, we also had more encouraging comments about other children from the children. So,
well, and Dr. Waldron, we were talking earlier about the incredible expense associated with ABA therapy and, of course, with many other therapies as well. We were talking about delivering this kind of therapy remotely through telemedicine. What kind of benefits do you see of using technology with children with autism? What have you been able to observe yourself?
Sure. So, obviously, there are many new technologies that are being developed that will impact all of our lives, but specifically for kids with challenging behaviors, it's good to be able to have a non-animate object that actually children can interact with, because there isn't that social piece. So it seems a little counterintuitive, but to be able to have a non-animate object involved in the situation is actually much more appealing to certain children living with ASD. So I think that aspect is wonderful. We have seen success with, obviously, through the telehealth piece. The other thing that's nice about telehealth or the apps is that they can be used in real-world settings. So when a child comes to a therapist's office, it's still a therapist's office. It's not where the child lives or plays all the time or is educated. So I think the portability and the small size of the technology allows it to be non-intrusive in a child's life.
Is there, from your perspective, is there a little bit of danger of getting too excited about the use of apps in a therapeutic way for children on the autism spectrum? I mean, we just talked about the Iowa legislature allocating $5 million for this very beneficial mm-hmm. therapy, and I could see politicians getting really excited about relatively inexpensive apps.
Well, correct. And the they need to realize that the development of the apps are really not inexpensive, because for every one that's successful, there are probably 100 that aren't successful. So, I mean, Juan Pablo can talk more about that. But the thing is, technology is in all of our lives, and it can reduce the cost of certain things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that cheap is always better. And we need to make sure that, as Juan Pablo said, that it is equally as effective or more effective than the traditional methods. But that's how we evolve as a society, and that's how medicine has evolved. New technologies come on board, and sometimes they're actually better.
I want to get back to the phones. Mary Jane is on the line. She's on the road right now. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi.
Hi. And you have a success story to share?
Yes. 20 years ago, my son was diagnosed with autism. We used intensive ABA to teach him to talk, which is very important. He recovered from autism. Right now he's a PhD student in robotics at Georgia Tech. And I believe our program cost about $30,000 a year. It was partially covered by Prudential Insurance. But we basically use the same resource as your certified behavior analyst did. I went to Ivar Lovas and hired his most recent graduate student, who came out to Waukon, Iowa, and trained some high school graduates to be able to deliver this therapy.
Wow.
We did treatment integrity by video review, because we didn't have the internet at that time. But we also used computer adjuncts. We didn't have apps, but we had basic discrete trial training type of computer programs on a Macintosh computer. And that certainly helped my son develop the ability to use the computers that he uses now to write scientific papers.
Well, Mary Jane, that's wonderful.
It's been done. It's been replicated. I read the same kind of research your certified behavior analyst did that was published by Lobos and his groups at UCLA, and then just hired one of his graduate students to write a program like the ones that Allison is writing. And then we trained people right in a small town in Iowa. And yes, my son recovered in about 2 years.
Well, Mary Jane, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. And, you know, it sounds Mary Jane and you, Allison, you were willing and able to really take extreme steps to make sure that your kids got this kind of therapy. And it's exciting that it's more widely available to people who maybe can't go to those extreme steps. And on the subject of technology, Allison, have you seen, with the way technology has developed, have you seen that as something that has really worked with your sons and with kids that you work with?
Absolutely, and in quite a variety of ways. We use iPads. The technology of touch screens is so intuitive for many of our kids with this diagnosis that it's easy to use. So we use it both as randomly as treatment. I would say we don't use it a lot to replace a person doing the teaching. However, there are so many engaging games and interests that can be motivators. So we have many kids who will work with us for quite some period of time in order to access a particularly interesting app. A young man very into the planets. We can upload an app about the planets and watch him go and learn everything, and then he'll work for 30 minutes to be able to have that. We've also seen technology be used as they get older. The high school to college community is very tech savvy, and it's also very less threatening and anxiety-driving to use technology to engage with others socially to start with. So there's a lot of opportunity to teach appropriate social interactions as they get older by using technology first. Heavily monitored by adults and everyone else, but there are some really wonderful ways that it can be used to help improve those skills that they need.
Let's go back to the phones. Heather's on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I have a granddaughter who we suspected very early on had autism, and it took quite a while to get her diagnosed. And she was diagnosed when she was two, and we understand that's like the standard. So I was wondering, why does it take so long when a family suspects there's a problem, like we did, within months of their birth? Why can't we diagnose this sooner and get these kids, you know, into these intensive therapies even faster?
Heather, that's a great question, one that I'm sure a lot of parents struggle with. And Dr. Waldron?
Sure, and thank you for calling in. You know, one of the things we want to do is actually make a correct diagnosis. So there are some behaviors that children can exhibit at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months of age that might be concerning for a diagnosis of autism, but also could be concerning for many other diagnoses as well. And as you know, there is no laboratory test that you can administer that would say, yes, this child definitely has autism, or no, this child definitely does not have autism. We like to see a child develop. We like to see how they're progressing. There are some things that we encourage parents to do, things to observe as well as things that they can do with their child to help improve their developmental trajectory. There actually is a lot of fascinating research that's going on at many universities across the nation on actually looking at a child's eye movements as early as a few weeks of age to see whether or not there's anything predictive within their eye movements and how they interact with certain objects that might be more predictive of autism and be able to have us obtain a diagnosis earlier. So you're absolutely right. Actually, your family was fortunate to have a diagnosis at 2 years of age. The literature right now shows, unfortunately, that the average age of a diagnosis is closer to 4 or 5. So I'm thrilled that your child was able to have that diagnosis so early and start to receive services. But stay tuned. We will be able to diagnose autism and many other things at an earlier stage. We're really all about increasing awareness. We want early identification and early intervention because we know that's what works. So thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah. Heather, thank you so much for your call. And we're nearly out of time. We've talked a couple of times through the hour about how dramatically things have changed in the world of autism in the last 20 years. And I know that this year in Iowa, we lost a great champion for autism, Sue Baker of Iowa City. And Dr. Waldron, can you just say just a word or two about what she did to champion treatment and help for people with this diagnosis?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for remembering Sue. Sue is a passionate educator, a wonderful advocate, and she was well involved in the world of children and their families living with autism for over 30 to 40 years. It's quite coincidental, as I came into the room today to talk to Juan Pablo, our paths intersect through Sue Baker, and maybe Juan wants to say one word or so.
And she was a mentor of yours as well, Juan Pablo?
Yes. So when I began getting interested in doing this line of research, I started looking around the university to see who's doing this work, and Sue's name came up, and she was very welcoming and very encouraging. She actually helped fund some of the early research that we did, and she helped connect me and my research group with the Area Education Agency, with Four Oaks and Cedar Rapids, doing work in that area too. So she was really instrumental in getting this going and launching the research that I just talked about.
All right. So one of the individuals that really built awareness of autism over time in the state of Iowa, and I'm sure around the nation and around the world as well. And of course, many, many other individuals have picked up that banner and will continue to carry it. Dr. Deborah Waldron, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Waldron is the director of the Regional Autism Assistance Program. Allison Bateen, thank you.
You are very welcome. Thanks for asking.
Allison Bateen is a board-certified behavior analyst who works at Hills and Dales in Dubuque. She's also the mother of three children who were diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And Juan Pablo Orcad, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Juan Pablo Orcad is Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Iowa and has developed apps for children with autism. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.